A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Cammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
That's right, Arrow Squad. We are back with number 172 of the squad, Season 8, Episode 4, Present Tense. I'm the Flash.
And I'm Cammy, and I'm extra excited this week, Flash. Can you guess why?
Could be the news, possibly, that you've found out about? That everybody found out about?
It is. I want you guys to just picture me running in circles around my room at home for this entire episode. I'm so sorry. I'm so excited.
Yes, she is very, very happy. They're bringing Diggle's brothers back.
Well, that's one of a few things. I will say my favorite's coming back and your favorite's coming back.
Yes.
So let's just zip through that. Felicity, Emily Bett is coming back, probably just for the final episode, but she's still coming back. Are you so excited?
I'm excited. I mean, they have to. They have to bring her back for whatever emotional farewell that this show is going to get and saying goodbye to Oliver. She's half of all of that emotion, so they kind of need to have her there for it to have the full effect. So I had a little bit of doubt, but not a lot. I knew they were going to figure out a way to bring her back. I just had faith.
Yeah, I thought what was going to happen was they would use old footage that they filmed right during like her last episode when she left with a monitor to maybe bring her back for just a second or for a phone call. But I'm so thrilled that Emily herself is actually coming back to film the final episode, right? So I'm so excited, but I don't want that to detract from the other cast return news that I'm assuming, Flash, you did see the promotional pictures for next week.
I saw Roy himself, Colton Haynes, posting a couple things on his social media. Yeah, he posted a picture of Diggle handing him the red jackets out in some back alley somewhere. So yeah, I mean, I knew he was coming back. It's just, I'm glad that he's coming back soon because we've already had 4 episodes without him.
Yes, I was very thrilled for you. I know that's one of your favorites, so I thought it was appropriate that we have him returning next week, and we got the news that Felicity's returning for the finale. It's just a good week for all of us, isn't it?
Totally is, yeah. You just give me Roy and give me Dinah, I'd have my best friend and my best lady on either side of me, and I'd be one happy Flash.
Well, let's keep it upbeat with that and dive into your ratings, because I think the positivity continues there, doesn't it?
Oh, man. All right. Yeah, this one, I give it a 9 convergences of timelines. Holy wow. What an episode. The tension, the intensity, the performances by everyone, the mixing of old and the new, the pacing, the writing, the emotions, everything hit their marks like only Oliver can with his bow and arrow. It was so damn good that I forgot to write notes. I have never written such few notes for an episode, so I'm going to be winging through a lot of it here. I actually just responded to the show notes here that we got written up, but I absolutely loved seeing the two casts coming together, and that's future and present tense. It went seamlessly. It's felt like they've been together all this time, playing off of each other, knowing the weight that they all carry in this final season. Every pairing, every scene was so well done, so well acted. It didn't matter who got paired up. It just worked. This should be the new show and the new team. Throw a ton of money at Stephen Amell. I don't care how much. Get him to stay on to season 10 with this cast that we had this episode.
I am so with you on being positive about this week's episode. I'm thrilled about the new 2040 team joining present day. I will say my rating's a little lower than yours. I mean, as it almost always is. It's a little lower than yours, and it's a little lower than what I gave last week as well. I'm giving this a 7.5 out of 10, in that this episode was almost everything I was hoping it would be in bringing together the present and the future. I thought this episode had a good smoothing effect. It smoothed out some storylines in terms of moving character arcs forward and some functional logistics of moving back and forth and who's on what team. Mm-hmm. There are some classic Arrow bickering moments, which raise difficult tension, and you know I've never been the hugest fan of Arrow bickering moments. I do think it was done well in this episode, though. That tension is grounded in logic and plot flow and character realities, and it brings out the acting best from our cast. Oliver and Mia, I think, were a fantastic example of that, where my initial inclination was to push against them not being, you know, this perfect loving father-daughter pair. And then I recognize more, you know, what the plot is surrounding them, what their character is, and I'm willing to lean into moments I would otherwise dislike. Logic and plot flow is kind of a difficult feat under the circumstances of inexplicable time travel as well, possibly across multiple universes, we don't know, with an ever-changing future, possibly, we don't know. So definitely kudos to Arrow for overriding, for all of the positivity that's overriding the few changes I would like to reach through the screen and make in this episode.
I'm so curious what those are. Maybe they'll come up in our notes.
Yeah.
Because I was just blown away. I think for me, that opening scene, it picked up right from where last week ended with that bomb of a cliffhanger. How are they going to continue that? And it's obvious that they actually probably filmed the scene continuously so they could keep that emotion and that reaction going. But man, right off the hop, especially the actor, and I can't remember his name for some reason, playing William, the fact he's getting to see his dad again, and Oliver's reaction, like he doesn't recognize him. And once William goes up and hugs him, and then it starts to set in that this is William 20 years later, to the emotions from all of them, like it was unbelievable performances. Like I said, like they've been acting together for 8 seasons. This was so palpable. It was so believable. It was pulling on my heartstrings. I was not blinking. I was not taking a breath. Just by their sheer performance, they were pouring out on screen. I loved it.
Yeah. I think that piece of bringing out the acting best is kind of the main high point of this week's episode. But before we get any further in it, because I know you and I are dying, as you said, to get into the notes, I feel like I'm on some sort of, you know, flash super speed thing this week. We should pump the brakes. We should go through our pre-show feedback because we did get 3 pieces of pre-show feedback this week.
That's true. All right. I'll kick it off with an email from Kate. Sure. And she says, "Hey guys, I just wanted to write about your questions for me from last week. I mentioned that I saw Zoe's death coming. Arrow has a tendency of having characters reach an unexpected level of clairvoyance right before they die. Normally, this is with supporting characters that are not integral to the A or B storylines. And while Zoe's been there in the future all season, she has played a minor role. So when she was being extremely logical and was pointing out the very obvious risk, I knew there was a high chance that she was not going to survive. You guys also asked if I had also predicted the 2040 crew being sent back in time. I didn't know how, but I had a strong feeling that the storylines were going to converge. I wasn't sure if Oliver would be sent to the future, or if they would be sent to the past, or if they would all end up on some other Earth where they were all detectives with terrible French accents. But to me, the stories were both telegraphing the possibility of bringing them together, and I was hoping that they would." Cool. Well, thanks for explaining that, Kate. You had better insight than we did. I was shocked on both fronts, so way to go. Way to be staying ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's insightful. Mm-hmm. The next piece we have is a voicemail from our friend Green Butterfly, Justina.
"Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Sorry I've been absent for a couple of weeks. My adventures on Earth 38 are keeping me one busy butterfly. Thank you so much for all your hard work of keeping me informed on all the events happening here on Earth 1. I just had to send you a quick message to say that I absolutely loved the third episode, because one of my previous favorite episodes was the Thanatos Guild, where this part of the story started with Nyssa and Thea destroying Lazarus pits. So I was really excited to go back to Nando Parbat. And really excited to see a picture of the monitor, or was that the anti-monitor, in that very old book that seems to prove to us that this kind of crisis that is building now perhaps might have happened sometime in the distant past, and it is in this historical record here on Nando Parbat. I gave that episode 9.5 out of 10 cliffside chats. The reason why it didn't get a 10 is because Nyssa wasn't there. I really hope we get to see her before Arrow takes its final bow. And because of Katrina Law's busy schedule, if they're holding out for a scene in the crossover instead, I am cool with that. Because if she could share the screen with Sarah again, I would be one ecstatic butterfly. Have a super week. Green Butterfly out.
I am so with you, Justina, on hoping that they bring Katrina Law back. We need to see Nyssa one last time on Arrow. I'm sure they were working their butts off to figure it out. Although Stephen Amell posted today, tonight he wears the Arrow suit for one last time, so they must be wrapping up the last episode in filming right now. So if Katrina Law has made her way back, it's already happened. We'll have to see, but I'm right there with you.
Yes, and it's so good to hear from you again after it's been a while.
It is. Well, you've got a nice big email from Erin, and as you so eloquently always do, why don't you pull out her highlights from her wonderful story she always sends us?
I absolutely will. And she has some notes in here, I'll say, for you regarding The Mandalorian. I will save that for you to visit later, but anybody can always read Erin's posts on our blog. And she also had a note for you saying she seconds your desire to keep JJ evil. That reminds me of Erin's previous campaign to keep Black Siren evil.
Yes.
She also says, as a Nyssa lover, I feel she would have been a great addition to this episode and ended up with the sword. It'll be a bummer if they end the show and she's not back again. So she's echoing Miss Green Butterfly's feelings on that. She says props to Katie Cassidy for doing a good job with this episode. Katie Cassidy directed last week's episode. And she says she definitely still has some questions about the League and goes on to outline them specifically regarding the Al Ghul sisters. She is booing the choice to kill Zoe, and she hopes that's retconned in the future, as we think that it will be. She says, speaking of the future series, if Mia doesn't have a menorah in the holiday scenes, I'm calling foul. Her mother, in fact, is Jewish. That's true. Well, thank you, Erin. Good thoughts as always.
Yeah, the one point I really like that she touched on here, that could Nyssa have possibly kept one of the Lazarus pits for herself for personal use? That's a fantastic, fun little theory to just imagine that she may have done that.
Yeah.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks for that pre-show feedback. Let's move into our favorite moments. All right, Cammy, I could not pick just one out of this episode because I love the episode start to finish. There were so many great moments, and we'll see if we can squeeze them in here. I picked two. I think some of my favorite scenes were Oliver and William. Every scene they got to have together. This is the first time the older William actor got to act alongside Stephen Amell, and you could swear they were father and son, and they hadn't seen each other in a long time. It was so well done and so well performed. I absolutely loved the chemistry that those two had. I hope they get more scenes together as this show rides off into the sunset. I really, really want to see them develop this newer version of the relationship. And I mean, I don't know if the younger actor playing William is coming back or not. We don't know what's happening with these future characters, but there was a couple of those moments. The one with when they first sat down in their apartment and, you know, Oliver's asking him a couple of questions and he says, you know, by the way, I'm actually gay, so I don't know if I really turned out. And it just, the look on Stephen Amell's face, he didn't flinch. He didn't hesitate. He just smiled. And he's like, I knew, buddy. And what? Yeah, I knew, buddy. We always knew. It was such a powerful moment and a wonderful moment between the two of them, because you could tell William was maybe a little bit worried about saying it, but he just needed to come out with it anyway. And you could see the relief come off him, and you could see the support Oliver's giving him. It's just a fantastic scene. You know, and then again later in the bunker when they were having a bit of a discussion in the bunker, and William was trying to tell him, you know, a bit about Mia. Just give Mia time, she'll come around. And Oliver wasn't quite ready to believe him yet, but William just kind of kept giving him the advice. And then the way Oliver was describing Mia, and William's like, ah, it kind of sounds like someone I know. And they're both like, yeah, your mom. It was such a funny moment. Like, these guys had probably more chemistry than any other pairing in this episode. It was wonderful. Now, the clip I'm going to play, because you guys know I love Dinah, I have not had much of her yet this season, so I picked the scene with Dinah and Diggle when she was giving him advice shortly after she gave advice to Renee. And it's just a really nice moment between the two of them, because Diggle's struggling with the fact that he suddenly has a full-on grown-up adopted son. What? And they're just having a nice talk. So that's the clip I'm going to play for you guys here.
I've never dealt with anything like this before. My head is still spinning. I want to blame someone, I just don't know who.
John, we all failed to save this city.
Yeah, Dinah, but I'm his father. This was on me.
So you did pick who to blame.
All this talk about JJ got me thinking about Andy, how I failed him. So yeah, blame is definitely on me.
I'm going to tell you the same thing I told Renee, because it's the same thing I've been telling myself. Knowing what's happened can either destroy us or save us. We've seen our worst. Now let's be our best.
Very good lines by Dinah there. We've seen our worst, now let's be our best. That's how you get a team ready to go.
She has such a pretty voice.
Doesn't she?
It's so calming.
She can read me a bedtime story anytime.
Yes. You know, from doing like a podcast, you get the opportunity to hear the clips without seeing them, right? Mm-hmm. And that is just kind of a cool experience. So I know obviously you guys listening to it also get that chance. So hopefully you're observing the extra moments and the voices or the cool music or something the way we are. Sort of a heightened rate as well.
Yeah, because you're only listening to it now. You don't have the visuals. So like you're saying, now you get to focus more in on the sound of their voice and the way they're saying the lines. And, mm-hmm. and of course the music, like we always say in the background, it's driving the emotion. Love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I won't belabor the point, but I will also just echo your affinity for the scene with Oliver and William. I thought it was fantastic for all the same reasons that you listed. Mm-hmm. And in contrast, the piece that I've selected as my favorite moment is way more upbeat and extremely chaotic. And I will tell you guys behind the scenes, even just me specifying the timestamps, Mr. Flash was like, wait a second, this doesn't quite make sense. You want this clip with this clip? Yes, I do, and I will explain it. But first, here it is.
And all I could do was call this the Cammy montage, because I didn't know what else to call it. So here it is.
The device has been neutralized.
I guess things have never not been tense around here, huh?
Yeah, I like to cope by stress eating. Go beer.
Thanks.
This is Nova.
Yes, it is.
Mia!
Get out of my way.
No. Hate me if you want. I'm not letting you do this.
My heart's a-pumping. Holy.
It's definitely one of the more chaotic points in the episode, and you can tell just they leaned into the chaos. It's a interesting sequence of actions. I would say it's very well cut. Each one's moving forward a character or a story arc, but they're very different tones for all occurring within the span of less than a minute. You have the funny moments of eating gummy bears contrasted with Oliver not allowing his daughter to kill somebody. It's really well done, and it's packed and fast, which they're having to do with the limited amount of time they have this season. So while we'll get into each of those moments that happens in that sequence in our discussion points, I just think that one point was really impressive to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, he doesn't want her to carry the burden of murdering someone at such a young age. He doesn't think she's ready for that yet, and he probably doesn't want her to ever carry that burden because it's weighed on him with how much that he's had to do.
Yeah, it's moments like that where you remember that she's still, you know, essentially a teenager, right? Mm-hmm. Or very young adult.
Yeah. Now, I'm just gonna, you know what, I'm gonna play one of the Oliver and William clips because I had them queued up here and we've got a spare minute. I just want to play one of them so we can get the feel.
Will you tell me something good about the future, please?
Well, you know those computer projects that I would work on in my room when I wasn't talking to you?
Yeah.
I turned that teen angst into a multi-billion dollar tech empire.
What?
Kind of a mogul.
That's phenomenal. That's, I get the feeling I'm going to be really, really, really proud of how you turned out. Yeah, well, I didn't just turn out. There's something I should tell you. I'm gay.
Anybody I know?
You know?
Yeah.
Felicity and I knew. And we just, well, we hoped that you were going to come out to us when you were comfortable. You clearly didn't get that chance. And that's on me. Sorry. Dad, we all have the chance to get to know each other now.
Your sister will let me.
Me will come around.
You know, she can be a little bit stubborn and hard to reach sometimes.
Shocker. Where'd she get that from?
Mom, I guess.
Let me know when it's done, okay?
You know, I have been told by several ex-boyfriends that I do this moody, broody thing when I'm problem-solving. Guess it must be genetic. It's Mia, right?
I didn't want her to go out there.
Well, then you should have made her stay.
You want me to put her in time out? She's an adult.
Yeah, like an adult, she makes mistakes.
She's right. I chose to go with the monitor. I abandoned her. I haven't earned a say.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean she doesn't want you to have one. Or that you shouldn't. And I'm saying that from experience.
You have kids in the future?
Oh, God, no. I mean, don't get me wrong. Kids are a miracle or whatever, but I was actually referring to when I left you to go live with Grandma and Grandpa.
Yeah, that one's still pretty fresh for me.
Right.
I mean, I thought you hated my guts.
I hated you for abandoning me.
I tried.
True. But I wanted you to try harder. Push a little more. I think that's all any child wants from their parents.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Dad, I am glad that you're
have such a great, I don't know, playful understanding of each other, because William has experienced a lot, and it took him growing up to finally understand what his dad was doing and why he did all of the things that he did, whether it was lying, whether it was protecting them, whether it was getting upset with him because he was trying to protect him, just all of that. You can tell William fully gets it now. And I love that it brought them together.
Yeah. I think William is so well portrayed, and he is very much like Felicity in that he's sort of the glue in these two teams coming together. He brings Oliver to the team. He brings his team, the future team, to Oliver's team. He really carries sort of his mother's legacy in that way. And that is actually our first discussion point, that multiple teams are colliding. The present tense, the time-traveling Team Arrow, the future Team Arrow. What did you think of their dynamic all working together in this episode?
Excellent point, Cammy. I will just let you know that about him being the glue, very much like Felicity. That's, yeah, perfectly highlighted there.
Thank you.
I mean, if you didn't pick up on my vibe yet, I thought the dynamics were near perfect. I couldn't have asked for a better combining of forces. They played off each other so well. Like I said, you'd think they'd been in all 8 seasons already together. It was crazy and it was awe-inspiring. Way to go, actors all around. Watching their different tactics and ideas of how to do things, I also thought was fun, even though ultimately they're fundamentally the same. They're both coming at everything the same way. It's like the older team and the younger team, they're mirroring each other. They just have a different way of expressing it. It's just, there's like shades of each other in their words, the way they express things. So I just, yeah, I loved it. I can't say enough positive about it.
Yeah, it was interesting to me that their dynamic was not what I expected as well. I did enjoy it, but they weren't exactly how time-traveling children have behaved on The Flash, for example. Future Team Arrow has their moment of separating off from the rest of the gang. They don't necessarily idealize the past team as legends. It's just a different tone than I expected. What did you think of their reveal there towards the middle/end that the future is actually bleak?
Yeah, that's actually kind of true what you said there. I think the reveal had to come out. It'd be pretty stupid to allow them to think that it's all roses and sunsets in the future. I also think it's perfect for the story and the team's purpose. Now that they know what's happened, so they can alter their courses to make sure it goes down a different path, a much more positive path. It's something, you know, to help JJ not go bad and help, you know, possibly Zoe not die or whatever. I mean, it's hard news for them to hear, but then you also have to realize that it's 20 years away in the future. They've got plenty of time to make changes so things turn out for the better. It's rewriting the future, which from all accounts is only a possible future like we've been speculating on. So it had to come out. They had to know. Now they've got, they've got all the time in the world now, 20 years worth, to make amends and fix things and understand that that's not the future we want. We've got to do things differently.
It's a toss-up between whether it'll go that route, which is what I want to happen, that they will change this future, that this is just one possible future, or if this becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, similar to what we see when we have Diggle and Connor interacting. And that's not the future yet, but is it because of this that it will be the future? Is it in spite of this that it will be the future? And I wanted to see what your thoughts were on parent-child reunion/meetings in this episode. You have Oliver and William reconnecting, Oliver and Mia reconnecting since he has not seen her since she was a baby, Diggle and Connor, of course, JJ to an extent, and the absence of Renee and Zoe getting to interact, but it's certainly discussed. Did you have a favorite present or future family dynamic?
Self-fulfilling prophecy. I like how you put that, because that leaves me with some questions and how you would express it. How would you mean what it does? That, like you were saying, could that bring the future? No matter what they do, that future is going to happen. No matter what they try, to stop it or to change it, no matter what they do, it's going to come. That's fascinating. So we're going to have to be left to find out if that future is for sure the future, or is it just the possible outcome? And everything's changed now. Now to your question about the parenting, if you are making me pick one, and I think you maybe have got a hint already, I have to say every single scene with Oliver and William, absolutely fantastic stuff. And the reason I say that and the reason I pick those is because we had enough time with young William, from the danger that he was in on several occasions to the touching home family moments with Oliver, Felicity, and him. Those were always some of our favorite scenes, when it just looked like a normal, regular, loving family, no superhero stuff involved at all. We loved that. And it gave us this feeling that we know William. We got to care for him. And then once he left, we felt him leaving. We wondered if he was going to come back. We didn't like the way he left going to his grandparents. They had a bit of a fight. So to get to see grown-up version William reunite with Oliver, it was something special. And you could see that there's still a bond there, and that, like I was saying, they understand each other, or more accurately, William now understands everything that Oliver had done for him, like I was hinting at there. So definitely that one stands out above the rest. I did like the struggle we see Diggle go through in finding out about JJ. That's got to be hard for him. I mean, just imagine your baby boy growing up to be a villain and a murderer. How do you carry that on your conscience? That's crazy. I mean, Renee and Zoe, I like Renee's performance. I like that he is upset and he's worried about her. And then when he finds out that she actually dies and he gets really angry, that's the exact reaction I would expect from him. But the newer, more refined Renee comes around and understands that he has a chance to be able to change that future. So all of them really, really well done. But the Oliver and William scenes stand out above the rest.
A good wrap up on our team talk before I dive us into villains.
Okay.
I was curious about this introduction of Grant Wilson, just to contrast it to another father-son dynamic that I conveniently left off my list because, in fact, Slade was not present in this episode.
Yeah.
He's our bad guy of the week. There are other villainy moments included. You know, JJ's future is revealed to Diggle. You have Laurel 2 or 3 or 4, whatever. She drops a reference to her villainy past. Renee finds out he ends up corrupt. Oliver and the team are still investigating the monitor. But let's specifically tie this into this father-son dynamic that doesn't exist with Grant and Slade. Do you think Slade will return? Is that what we're supposed to be getting from this in an episode centered around parent-child interactions and suddenly a famous villain's child is around? Is the parent somewhere behind?
I think they have to bring Manu Bennett back. I mean, they're getting Felicity to come back for the finale. They're getting everybody. We've seen Moyer. We've seen Malcolm Merlyn. Why wouldn't they? I mean, I don't know what Manu is up to right now, if he's available or if he's holding out. I have no idea. And I would love them to keep at least something secret. I want to be surprised by one thing. And that's the only thing that's bugging me about the Arrowverse right now. They are spoiling everything before it comes out. This crossover event, I'm actually getting pissed off with how much they are revealing. We might as well not watch it anymore. We already know everything that's coming, and it's driving me crazy. So Arrow, please, keep something secret. Let us be surprised. Bring back Slade. It's just, I mean, my fingers, my toes, my legs, everything. I'm crossed up like a pretzel hoping that he comes back.
I really do think he will. I think the fact that they had his son return in an episode centered around kids returning, I think he has to be somewhere behind. But I do want to also give you a chance to talk about your thoughts about Grant Wilson and any of the other villain plot lines I just listed. Is there a villain plot line from this episode that was most interesting to you, other than your hope and mine that Slade will return?
Well, we had talked about this in the last couple episodes, and they ended up bringing the Slade son back that I didn't like. He's the one that I just don't find believable as a bad guy. He's not scary at all to me. I don't know what it is about this actor. He seems like a spoiled brat that got too much money or something, and people are just following him because there's something about him. Don't like this guy. I did like how Renee handled hearing what he turns out to be and how he takes that to change his speech for the future. I think he did a really good job there. Especially that whole sequence when he starts doing his speech and then it's a montage of footage as he's speaking and everything that he's saying is matching the scenes that we're watching. It was a beautiful voiceover monologue for Renee, and I give him props for being that way, or for being able to perform that and be able to speak that way and tell us a story. We've never had Renee give a monologue like that. It's usually one of the other more upfront characters, so those were really great for him. I also liked Connor practically saying word for word exactly what I said was the reason JJ turned bad. I mean, they kind of touched on it last week, but boy, oh boy, did he really give it word for word exactly why I said JJ turned bad. So I found that really enjoyable. It was also a great reveal for Diggle to find out the truth about JJ. That's got to be sickening to find out. I don't know what other words I can use to describe. How would you feel to find out that your kid turns out to be that way? How do you deal with those emotions? Well, at least for now, I think Diggle's going to do things differently so JJ won't become jealous, won't become envious of the love they're giving Connor. Now, the one funny point, though, funny as in how's it going to work? If Connor is going to stay with him now because Diggle invited him to stay back at the house, will he be there when his younger self shows up?
See, that, I think, to me, is indicative of the fact that the 2040 team is not there to stay. Yeah. They'll be there for a while, and then they'll go back to the future, and their younger selves will live out their lives, and hopefully they'll have done something to make their younger selves' lives better.
Yeah, possibly. And then a point about the monitor stuff. I mean, he is kind of villain, anti-villain. We don't know what he is right now. And there's people saying that he could be the anti-monitor. Someone had mentioned on Supergirl that the anti-monitor showed up, but I have no idea because he looks exactly the same. And I thought the anti-monitor is what's coming. I thought the anti-monitor is what's shooting out the energy wave that's destroying the universe. I didn't think he would be here already and the wave is coming behind him. I'm confused. That part is very confusing to me.
Mm.
And it's confusing that he's making Oliver do things, like he's got all these missions for Oliver, but now Oliver has kind of figured out a few things about him, and now he's changed his mind. He's out to stop the monitor, and the monitor wants Oliver's friends to betray him. And for what? This part I'm getting a little bit lost in. I'm a little bit confused in the monitor's story.
I think they want us to be lost in the monitor's story. Okay. I think that's their attempt at mystery this time around. You know, they've had villains be a mystery by being faceless, or we don't know who they are, or we don't know who they're working for,
right,
or we see them with a mask on, but we know it's, you know, oh, it's Adrian Chase in real life or whatever. I think that's what they're using. And Arrow is pretty good about always working in a mystery because they don't have meta, right? Mm-hmm. And we are still uncertain about some of the monitor's plans, parameters. Frankly, I think one of the things we're most uncertain about, or I'm most uncertain about, is his degree of power. What exactly can he and can he not do?
Yeah.
And the structure of time is yet to be revealed in other worlds. Are the kids from a set in stone future? Are changes being made to their time in present time? It goes back to what we already covered about whether or not the future is malleable or not. So what do you think about some of those mysteries?
I'd say they've already changed the future. I totally think it is changeable, malleable, moldable, whatever word you want to use. I think it's going to depend on how much more the kids give away on information about the future. And like we've said, I believe strongly it's only a possible future. That's why it's changeable. The future is changeable for all of us, unless you believe in ultimate fate and all that kind of stuff. you should be able to change your course. So I believe in this story, it is changeable. And I'm pretty sure they've already changed things by just what's happened in the last two episodes. Also, to continue what I'm thinking, why did the kids get brought back if not to change the future? That's what I'll throw back at you with that question. Unless it's simply the monitor grabbing all the heroes he possibly can to fight the crisis battle, or could he really be just a big super softy and he's letting all the families have the chance to fix things, patch things up, or get some together time before the end comes? I doubt it. I think ultimately, with what we've seen so far, they're able to change their futures, and that's what we are seeing. Leading up to some kind of happy ending for this show, there has to be a sunset at the end.
I would like the show to have a happy ending, and more importantly, I would like the kids to be changing the future. I don't mind that they may be changing the present or the future, because I don't want the future that they have to be set in stone. That's just not quite as interesting. I want the twists and turns and changes. And to that end, in terms of a twist, I suspect there may be more of a twist coming than just the twist of Lila working for the monitor or the twist of the kids ending up in present day. It seems like they may be foreshadowing this idea of turning traitor or becoming bad. It was hinted at a few times throughout this. Do you think someone good will turn bad, or anybody bad will turn good?
They may redeem JJ from turning bad in the future. Will Laurel betray Oliver, or is she smart enough to trick the monitor and go with him, only betray him in the end? Maybe she's finally turned that leaf, because we already had the redemption arc for her, and I don't see them turning her bad again after that arc. Especially because she's got the new Canary spinoff show coming, where she is a hero, so I cannot see them making her bad again, only to redeem her again. I think people would be too upset with that. They're still struggling with accepting her as a hero right now, so I think that would be the wrong path to take. I have a feeling she's going to trick the monitor into thinking she's going to work with him to fool Oliver, and she's going to ultimately, in the end, have some kind of one-up on the monitor to help them win this fight.
Yeah, I don't see her switching sides either. I'm with you on that. I wonder if it could be Renee, but I always wonder if it could be Renee. Yeah. I also wonder if anybody in our transmissions has some thoughts about that. I think they may have a few things to say about this week's episode.
As they usually do. And I, while we're talking about transmissions, I had noticed on Facebook something that I just want to echo, because I had it in my notes here as a small nitpick. The one thing I was questioning that made me go, what are you doing, writers, is how the heck did our future kids' cell phones work 20 years in the past? Unless TV they got magic. New ones right away, unless they got new ones right away or something, I don't know. But to me, that was just a little bit of an oops. You can't bring a phone from the future and expect it to work, expect it to have service and be on a payment plan or whatever. Anyway, yes, let's get to transmissions.
Yes.
All right, let's kick off our transmissions with Destiny Dazzler. As she's always finished watching the episode, here's what she says.
Hi, Squad, it's Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I absolutely loved it. It is definitely my favorite episode of the season so far, and it may very well be my favorite episode of the entire series. I just loved it so much. It was so emotional. The acting in this episode was phenomenal. It was so cool to see Oliver get to know his kids, like really get to know them and get to spend time with them. And I loved the scene when William tells Oliver that he's gay and Oliver already knew. I loved how Oliver's relationship grew with Mia, like over the course of the episode. And I'm just so excited to see what happens from here and how their relationships grow over the rest of the episodes. I'm really interested to see what happens with Laurel now that the monitor has told her that she can save her Earth by betraying Oliver. I don't think she'll do it, but I also wouldn't be surprised if she did. So I think that's definitely going to be interesting. And I'm interested to see how that now that Team Arrow knows what happens in the future if things change and, like, JJ is no longer evil, and what the differences will be now that they know. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Good questions and thoughts, Dazzler, as always.
Mm-hmm. Our next email comes from Christy. She writes in to say, this episode gave me everything I wanted. 10 out of 10. Wow. She says, some highlights. It was so nice not having to cut away to future past scenes. Everything flowed really well, and it felt so cohesive to have the entire team, past and present, out in the field as a unit. I was on the edge of my seat during the beginning scene as all the characters put the pieces together. In particular, I was impressed with Ben and Steven's phenomenal acting.
Yes.
Diggle and Renee, the confrontation after they learned about their kids was brutal and gut-wrenching, and I understood where they were both coming from. They're both getting mad about the future mistakes, which is so trippy. I'm still waiting for the conversation about the two versions of their kids existing at once. This is a Flashpoint level problem. I thought it was interesting that JJ seemingly wasn't brought back, but maybe that would have been too explosive for Diggle and Renee when they learned the truth. Speaking of which, that was probably my favorite scene in the whole episode. Scenes where the truth comes out in large groups are riveting, especially with characters that have so much history. And Mia has 100% mastered the stubbornness of season one Oliver. And I was happy to see that Oliver's teammates picked up on that right away. Definitely your daughter. All Oliver could do was nod begrudgingly. It was really great to see Oliver and Mia fighting side by side. Before last week, I didn't think we'd ever get to see that. She was more hostile towards him than I would have thought. I viewed it as an opportunity to know your father for the first time, and her viewpoint was the father who abandoned her, which is valid. I'm glad she came around some at the end, because you can only do the teenage young adult angst for so long in the face of your father's looming death. The monitor makes less and less sense to me the more we go along, and his motivations and requests of Team Arrow seem all over the place, so maybe there's some truth to the monitor-anti-monitor theory.
She's right in line with us, and yeah, excellently excellently worded there, for sure.
Could not have said it better myself, Christy.
Next up is Doodoo Gaisler, and he says, hey, Martin and Camion, how are you? After the shocking ending of last episode, I couldn't wait to see where we were going from here. I have a few notes about this episode. Number one, everybody is worrying about the future and they all want to know how to change it, but they already did. The minute 2040's team, Arrow told them what is going to happen. There is no chance the future going to take place the same way after what we saw in this episode. Number two, it took maybe 5 minutes from the decision of 2040's team Arrow not telling 2019's team what happened in the future to actually break this decision. Number three, it's about time that someone made the connection that Connor, JJ are the future Diggle Andy. Diggle himself referred to that. And point number four, to this point, there is no sense in the monitor and anti-monitor's request. I think that only the crossover will put things in order. Excellent episode. Can't wait for next week. Have a great weekend. Doo-doo Gaisler. Well, I think we're 3 for 3 so far and loving this episode.
I think so. It's all positivity. Do you think we can continue and keep it rolling with another positive one?
Let's see.
The next one is from Dad L. He says, hello, Arrow Squad. This episode reminded me of the wise words of Doc Emmett Brown. Your future is whatever you make of it. So make it a good one. That was the real lesson in this latest installment of Arrow. I'm glad future Team Arrow got to interact with the present team. How long will FTA stick around? And why did the monitor begin to bring them to the past to begin with? So many questions, and I'm glad the mystery of the monitor's plan is staying intact. I like the very slow burn. The Deathstroke gang fell flat for me. It was a plot device that I think could have been executed a little better. I give this episode a 7.5. I'm going to be mayors. Nice reference there. Dad L, last father of Krypton.
I agree with him. If there is a part of this episode that did fall flat, it is the Deathstroke gang. And it's because of the actor playing Slate's son. And yeah, there was nothing to it. There was no weight to it. There was no consequence or fear that I felt coming from those guys. So yeah.
Yeah.
And next up is an email from Kate Johnson. And she says, hey guys, I thought this episode was fantastic. We're 5 for 5, Cammy.
Yes, we are.
They had some great emotional scenes that I thought were beautifully done. It was different from what I had expected, but I'm very pleased with what I got. 8.5 out of 10. So as much as I liked the episode, there were some moments that I didn't enjoy, and by moments, I mainly mean Curtis. I don't really understand what his purpose was in coming back. To me, it was obviously a character that was brought back because this season is the final season, so everyone and their mother has to return. William could have easily covered the Overwatch duties with less distracting jokes that were even lost on the characters in the show. There was even a moment that William looked annoyed to have Curtis there, which made me laugh. And throughout the episode, Renee had some lines that got under my skin. He seemed so surprised that he would become corrupt in the future, and yet he has betrayed Oliver so many times that I want to change his name from Wild Dog to Judas. Dinah's role this episode also made me realize that ever since last year, she is so unpredictable in how she's going to react. She's overly snarky and makes a comment about not always trusting Oliver, or she is unreactive and is the human expository machine. So this episode, when she was more understanding about the secret of Mia, it felt like a surprise of character growth. But then she would play wise sage counselor to Dig and Renee, and I was questioning who she was. Last time she was making that much sense, although that could be argued considering she's discussing time travel, topic she has no reason to know anything about, was early in season 6 when she was telling Diggle to stop with the drugs. Laurel also had me conflicted this episode. While I felt like she was extremely on brand, I felt like her insertion into the Oliver Mia conflict was added simply to add backstory and trust between Laurel and Mia in the spinoff. Yes, I agree. Oliver's comments felt authentic to herself and actually pointed out some beautiful parallels between Mia and Felicity, but those parallels could have just as easily been drawn by Oliver. He could have mentioned Felicity's struggle against Diaz last season. There was just something about it that felt weird. But the biggest mistake of the episode was that Oliver never asked about Felicity. He mentioned her a few times, but never asked how she was, where she was, nothing. I don't believe for a second that he was not dying to hear a nugget of info about her. And yes, of course, the argument could be made that he feared for the worst, and so he didn't ask because he didn't want to hear that she was dead. But he could have said that. Or one of the kids could have started to mention her and he expressed his hesitation. Something. Anything. You're kind of valid point there. Now, the real MVP of this episode was William. He served an interesting role. He was the only character that had experienced remembered parts of both time periods. He's from the future, but he remembers everyone from 2019, and he's able to serve as a bridge between the two. And he still has his own story. His first heart-to-heart with Oliver was beautiful. Obviously, Oliver and Felicity knew he was gay. That was such a lovely moment, and he respects the power of the timeline like an absolute genius. It's not that hard, people. Stop messing things up. Oh, that's my favorite paragraph.
So yes. Well, yes.
She goes on, and the Mia-Oliver dynamic was perfect. I don't know who thought of this, but a lot of Mia's mannerisms mirrored things Felicity did all the way back in season 3 when Oliver couldn't make up his mind about being with her. But it was so effective in making Oliver question the reasons for leaving Felicity and his kids, an issue he's understandably been struggling with this season. And Mia's reaction was perfect. She was not emotionally prepared to meet the father she lost, so she blamed him for all the pain she had grown up without him. It also showed how fearful she was of loving him. She pushed him away because she was afraid that if she had gotten to know him, the pain of losing him again would be too much for her to take. But that moment when Oliver stops her when she goes to kill Grant, that was the moment that everything changed for her. She could see his want to protect her, and not just physically. He knew the toll it would take on her, and she knew it too. And yet, she feels like she has to kill Grant until Oliver finally tells her that he wants to help her find another way, shielding her from the pain of murder. Much more eloquently put than what I was trying to say. Beautifully said. And her final paragraph. There were some other moments I loved, like Diggle's reaction to Connor calling him dad. Mia saying, at least we didn't die. And Mia shooting that slow-mo arrow. Oh yeah, that was awesome. But no moment made me quite as happy as the Monte Cristo scene. It was such a beautiful callback to the moment Oliver realized he could have the family he dreamed of having. William gesticulated just like Felicity. Oliver has the same smile of pure happiness. And Mia, by accepting the snack like William did, admits that she wants to have Oliver in her life to be part of his family. I'm interested in seeing what happens in Russia. Will it stay in Russia? And that's the end of her email. Excellent thoughts. Oh, wow. Fun.
I always love just hearing her succinctly say everything that I struggled to say for the last hour.
Exactly. She does that to us every week. It's so funny.
Yes. Thank you so much.
And that wraps it up for us, Tammy.
It does. And I'm excited on your behalf for next week, which is episode 5 entitled Prognos. And I wonder who will be joining the team in that episode.
I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. But I also don't want it to happen so fast. We're all next week means we're halfway through this final season.
Oh, true. Good point.
Well, I'm enjoying it. I'm glad that everybody was so happy with this episode, because I think this one is right up there with the premiere, right behind the premiere, I would say, as the best so far this season.
It's second place to last week's episode for me. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Well, awesome, guys. Have a great weekend. I almost lost my train of thought there. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you next week when Arrow comes back for its halfway point episode. This is The Flash, signing off.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.